Good afternoon, everyone. Shalom Aleichem. Bruchim Haboim. Welcome to this opportunity to come together and learn. I want to just begin by expressing Hakaras HaTov, tremendous gratitude to everyone who has continued to join with us, with our Kolel, to continue this incredible journey of learning that despite the various impediments on the outside and all of the difficulties that we're facing during this period, yet the Torah continues to thrive, Bli Ayin Hara. So Baruch Hashem, we're excited to welcome all of you for this learning opportunity, but this is just one of many. This evening we will, please God, have our fireside chat, soulful fireside chat, as well as the regular shiurim. The email went out this week with a whole slate of shiurim for 2021. Please God, Abo Aleinu Letova, with learning every single day. Today, it's Thursday, January 7th, 2021, and many people are reflecting and considering and thinking about the events that took place in Washington, D.C. yesterday when a group of individuals, rioters, attacked the U.S. Capitol building, and there was a tremendous amount of damage and confusion, and there was even the loss of human life, and so much has been said, and the effects of it, and the thoughts about it, and many people have had a lot of strong feelings of shock, feelings of anger, feelings of frustration, feelings of disgust. And perhaps it's an opportunity for us to take a step back as Torah observant Jews to listen to our neshamas, to what we can reflect on from a spiritual perspective in this time when we're thinking about a nation. And we're thinking about a nation because this week we read Parshas Shemos, which is the beginning of the story of the Jewish nation. Last week we concluded the Jewish family. We had the individuals and the families of Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov and their children and all that happened to them as individuals or as a family. But this week we start to tell the tale of a nation. And there are quite a few parallels or insights or aspects that we can glean from the Torah's presentation of the creation of our Jewish nation and how we can think about a nation in general and how we can reflect on the situation that we find ourselves in for those of us who are living here in the United States of America, in a place in which we are so grateful to reside in this Medina Shel Chesed, in this exile of kindness where we find ourselves right now. It's an opportunity to reflect. And so today I want to share with you four points of reflection that I hope will be the beginnings of a conversation that you can have with others. But it's got to start somewhere. And that is the first place to start, the first of these four points, is in what we witnessed yesterday as the ultimate breakdown in civility, in the expression of violence in such a raw and, for many people in this country, an unexpected and unprecedented experience of feeling and seeing that kind of violence in a place like the Capitol building, that expressed the breakdown of civility, of political discourse, of conversation, that really captures a lot of the mood that we're living in and we've been living in for quite some time. You know, the violence itself, it underscores why Chazal and Perkei Avos emphasize the fact that we need a centralized and strong government. But it reminds us this idea of people hitting each other and attacking each other physically. It reminds us of what Moshe Rabbeinu encountered when he saw two Jews. They were hitting each other. They were fighting. And he said to them, Lama sakereyecha, why are you hitting your fellow? I don't understand. What's going on? Lama sakereyecha, why are you hitting? So Moshe Rabbeinu, by asking that question, does two things. Number one, he points out that a culture of violence, that responding to a conflict with a raised hand, is not acceptable. But the other thing that he does by this, and he models it for us, is he gets curious. He doesn't just yell at them. He doesn't just say, "You're Russia for raising your hand. How could you do this?" He says, "Lama? Why?" He wants to get curious and understand, where are they coming from? Why are you hurting? Why are you acting like this? Is it because you're not feeling heard? It's because you're mourning some kind of a loss. Where is this coming from? Moshe Rabbeinu says, it's not acceptable. But whenever there's a disagreement, we need to get curious. We need to understand where it's coming from. Unfortunately, today we're living in a society, we're living at a time where we don't seem to have, or we haven't found the way to create that ability to talk to each other and to try to listen to each other. And that's what happens when Moshe Rabbeinu, he asks them, he says, "Lama sakereyacha?" And what do they respond? They respond to him, "Who are you? We don't have those kinds of conversations. We're not interested. We're going to continue hitting each other." Most of these people that we encounter in life who are engaged in this kind of destructive behavior, they're probably good, normal people. They're probably just really hurting. And yet we haven't created as a society, we haven't created a place, a space, a makom, where people can feel comfortable to share and to talk and to express in a normal way what they're hurting about. And so, unfortunately, many times these people, they're resorting to this type of violence, lo aleinu. And it's unconscionable. It's insane. It's terrible. It's the most reprehensible way of behavior. So what do we need to do? We need to create an environment where even people like that who are hurting to that extent, can someone help them make them feel heard? And the truth is, this cultural violence that we're witnessing outside in Washington is not alien to us in a Torah community. It's not foreign to us. You know, if you think back in history, the second Beis HaMikdash, Chazal describe stabbings, Kohanim who were stabbing each other with knives in the Azara in the Beis HaMikdash. Chazal described to us how there were, in the second Beis HaMikdash at the end, during the period of the Romans, there were Biryonim, murderous zealots, marauders. And what is the context in which that operated? What Chazal tell us in Yuma, that the second Beis HaMikdash was plagued by sinas chinam, baseless hatred, an inability to understand other people, to create a context where people can just talk to each other and open up their soul and say, "This is hurting me, this is my problem," where people could feel a little bit vulnerable and talk about what it is that's bothering them. Instead, they resorted to stabbings and murders. Yes, there are hooligans who have defaced their Tzelem Elohim, but not everyone. And so one practical, constructive thing that we can do in the face of this type of violence is to foster constructive dialogue, to create a context so that people in our circles of influence don't feel that rejected, they don't feel that ostracized, they don't feel that they're not worthy, that they can't have a discussion with us, that we can't let them be heard, even if we don't necessarily agree with them at all. The Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh says that the world is like a mirror. And when we see outside that there's a breakdown in civility and that there's violence and that there is not an environment where people can be heard, we have to ask ourselves, do we have that within inside of us? Are we creating dialogue? Are we interacting with civility? What does our Shabbos table conversation sound like? You know, it doesn't have to be perfect, but it's a reminder. It's a wake-up call. In our own community, we are struggling with, differences of opinion on how to deal with the crisis of Corona. We have differences of opinion about how to go about policies and things like that. That's true. And these differences are significant, and they're important, and they're not to be glossed over because sometimes they have very significant ramifications. But are we giving other people space to be heard, even if we don't agree with them? Are we demonizing them? Are we shutting them down? Are we shaming them? Or are we giving them an opportunity to share their voice and their opinion, even if we don't agree with them, even if we think maybe it's dangerous and we need to stay far away from them? But are we creating a context of civility in which we can have these conversations? In the way that we talk about people? Yes, it's heated, and yes, it's passionate, and yes, it's challenging. But what's the context? Can we create a conversation of civility? That's number one. Number two, truth. Chazal tell us, Chosomo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu is emes. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent an email, a fax, a tweet down to this world, he signed it emes. Aleph Mem Tuf. Truth. Chosomo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu emes. Because emes, truth, which that forges the foundation of trust, that fashions the bedrock of all living in this world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world for us to live in it, and that's existing through interactions that are predicated on emes. That's the basis of commerce. You know, when you go to the bank and you cash a check, we're expecting there's going to be emes. That's the social fabric of life. When a person makes a bid for attention to someone else, when we call upon someone else, or when they look to us, it's based on the foundation that we have the same set of truthful assumptions. Emes is aleph till tuf. It's the beginning of life, and it's the end of life. It's the context in which we live. And as people, emissaries, and those who follow the Ribbono Shel Olam in this world, who are aspiring to walk v'halachta bedrachav in his footsteps, we must protest the Alma de Shikra, the world of falsehoods that we're living in. The Orchos Shabbos, the Hilgot Musar Sefer, the Orchos Shabbos, points out, amazing quote, "U'chusha'adam osek be'emes," when a person who is engaged in emes and truth, "az ein hasheker davek la'emes," that removes all falsehoods. It shakes off any falsehoods. U'chashiyesh emes, and when there is truth, kiviyachol, so to speak, machon shivta b'shamayim neged bnei adam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's abode, the spiritual place of resting for the Rebbe Shalom, relates to us. Az modeh sha'asa shamayim v'aretz v'ayam v'chol asher bam. It validates our existence by us living truthful lives. U'chashiyesh begida. But when there is treason, Oz kiviyachol, then it's, so to speak, kemo she'ein machon shifto b'shamayim uva'aretz. It's as if God's not living here. Because we need to insist on a world of truth. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is chosoma shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu is emes, and he sets the assumption of our existence. Machon shifto, the way that he lives in this world is through us being connected to truth. And that's why the Torah emphasizes emes. And Chazal formulate this even when it's slightly uncomfortable. For example, there are certain terms. There's a word that appears in the Chumash. It is spelled Yud Shin Gimel Lamed Nun Hey. And it is a vulgar expression that appears in the context of the Tochacha regarding the abuse that will take place of a woman in the context of the Tochacha. But that word is not read. We say Yishgavena, Yishgavena, Yud, Shin, Chaf, Beis, Nun, Hey. That woman will be lied with, slept with, but not that word Yishgavena. So why does the Torah write Yud, Shin, Gimel, Lamed, Nun, Hey? You know why? Because we have to know the truth. You have to see the truth for what it is, even if you're going to speak in a Lashon Nekiya, in a refined manner of speech. But the truth has to be seen. It can't be covered up. We're living in a time and an age with the internet and social media that have become the greatest purveyors and amplifiers of lies that should offend our spiritual sensibilities because we are seekers of emes. Doesn't mean that any one person has the monopoly on emes, but the basic tenets, the basic assumptions. It's true, Chazal did tell us, and Rashi quoted in last week's parasha, that it's okay to misrepresent something, mipnei hashalom, lishanos Mipnei HaShalom. The Chafetz Chaim points out, it's careful. You have to be very careful with this, not to overdo it, not to be Mishanim Mipnei HaShalom in a way that's too direct. We don't want to actually say a lie. But why are we Mishana? Why do we tweak the MS? It's Mipnei HaShalom, to create peace. Because we're looking for peace. We're seeking peace. That's what the Chafetz Chaim speaks about at great length in the Sefer Shemiras HaLashon. To pursue peace. So we're even allowed to bend the truth. But now, we're living in an environment where we have cast aside MS in favor of Machlokas. People are spouting lies, fomenting arguments and riots. It is true. Chazal tell us there was a debate when the Malachim were consulted by HaKadosh Baruch Hu about creating the world. The Ribono Shel Olam said, what do you think? Nu? And the Midah of Emes said, Al Yibare, don't create the world. Bad idea. Al Yibare, don't create the world. Why? Because they're always Dovri Sheker. And ultimately, when it came to the question of Yibare and Al Yibare, Medrash says, Bereshis Rabba says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took Emes and he threw it down. He threw the Emes down. He threw down truth. But that's for the purpose of Yibare, to build something, to build a world, to have a place where people can live and thrive and people can accomplish their mission in life. Yibare. Other than that, we need to be champions of MS. And we see something that's not MS, and not MS meaning it's not objectively true. It doesn't accurately reflect what something is, the complexity of it, the nuance of it. We need to call it out. The third thing to think about in our context, potentially, is the power of words. We witnessed a mob in an actual Makom Kadosh, not in Sefer Shmos, but in Sefer Bamidbar. Korach comes with a mob and he confronts Moshe Rabbeinu. And he confronts him, and there's going to be a showdown in a truly holy place. Not a bastion of democracy, a bastion of holiness, a makom of v'shachanti v'sochem, where the divine endless light is going to be filled in this space, however we understand that, in this world. Well, how did that happen? How did that come about? How did Korach get these people? Vayikach Korach. Korach took them. What does it mean he took them? He lifted them up? He put them on a wagon? No. Rashi explains, it quotes from Chazal. Lokham bedvarim. He took them with words. People are moved by words. Words have consequences and they lead to actions. We need to be extremely careful not to draw parallels to other periods in history, Rahmanul Islam. That's not what we're in the business of doing. It's totally misplaced. But we need to learn lessons from those periods of history. And we have seen, we Jewish people have seen on our backs, in our families throughout history, the results of movements and hatred that began with words and ended with expulsions, pogroms, and gas chambers. What does Paro do to introduce the slavery in this week's parasha at the beginning of our formation as a Jewish nation? He just has a conversation. Havin eschak moled. Let's come up with a plan. Let's have a suggestion. Our enslavement in Egypt didn't begin as a military conquest, but as a political movement. One with words, with arguments. Our people, we the Jewish people, know better than anyone the potential destructive power of words. We know that physically our hands, the yadayim, they have the ability to tear down someone's guf, someone's body. But unfortunately, our words are even potentially more hazardous, more destructive, because they can damage someone's inner self, that connection to their neshama. Name calling and shaming, those are violations of Tzelem Elokim. David HaMelech, our greatest, arguably, our greatest wordsmith, poet, author, speaker, he was imperfect, as he acknowledges many times in his words of Tehillim. And that's okay. He was vulnerable, and that's beautiful. And David HaMelech was also very strong. And being strong and decisive and visionary doesn't require us to use words that put other people down, that diminish them, that mock them, that harp on their faults. David HaMelech in Tehillim decries the Chitzei Gibor Shenunim, those with the mouths that shoot arrows. We have to remind ourselves of the power of words and the challenge of what happens when somebody misuses their words, the danger of those arrows, but also the power of supportive and conciliatory words of chizuk. And finally, leadership. For the Jewish nation, leadership is crucial. On a national level, just if you take a bird's eye view of Tanakh, you see a trend. As the leader goes, so goes the people. And that's why the Melech has the responsibility to pursue greatness, to pursue godless spiritual achievements. Not to be perfect, but to pursue that goal, as we all do. And that's why the Melech, because he's not just a yachid, an individual, he relates to the nation. He has to have two Sifrei Torah that inspire him. One personal, one communal. Two Sifrei Torah on that journey. Well, one of the Melech's primary responsibilities in the Jewish nation is to create and maintain and nurture institutions of law and order. And this is true, it's paralleled also in the non-Jewish world, in the Gentile world, that the Torah has an expectation of the B'nai Noach, that all humankind establish norms, dinim, courts, for enforcement of civil norms. The Torah demands respect for these institutions. And in the absence of norms, of laws, and of people standing up for those laws and those institutions, we have, according to many Rishonim, what we saw in Parshas Vayishlach with the abuse of Dina and the people of Shechem not setting up courts, not taking someone to justice, not holding people accountable, because there needs to be law and order, and that is part of the responsibility of the leadership. And these institutions, these national, judicial institutions of law, they're not perfect. No one thinks they're perfect. The Bezdin of Shechem, I can't imagine anybody thought they would be perfect. The Bezdin HaGadol in Yerushalayim is not perfect. We have an entire Masechta, an entire tractate called Horios, which is dedicated to what happens when the greatest sages of the generation, the Eine HaEda, the eyes of our generation, fall short. They make a mistake. They get the call wrong. But nonetheless, that's the psak. If one of those judges undermines the authority of that Bezdin in a circumstance called Zakin Mamre, that person could face a capital punishment, because the leadership must maintain the integrity of the institutions of law and order. And when there's a breach, the leader is expected to react. When there is a macha'a, a protest that needs to be voiced, so the great individuals need to speak out. The Gemara tells in Shabbos about Parasol Shel Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the cow of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, that it went out on Shabbos with a bow in its horn, which was a violation of Hutzah. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? The cow of Rabbi Elazar? The Gemara says, that's not what happened. It's not his cow. It was his neighbor's cow. But he had the opportunity and the responsibility to make a macha'a, to protest. A person who's in that role of leadership, in that position of leadership, and he sees something happening. In the case of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, it's just his neighbor with the little thread, but he needs to make a macha'a. That's what part of what leadership is establishing and furthering institutions, and when there's an affront to those institutions, to step up and make a macha'a. Chazal tells us we have to give kavod to the malchus. So we have a president, a sitting president, President Donald Trump. I don't know him personally. I don't have Twitter. So I can't attribute motive or speak about him as a person. I don't know him. I haven't had that opportunity to have a conversation. I recognize, from my small point, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has chosen Lev Malachim B'Yad Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has chosen him to govern here for these years. And Baruch Hashem, in many ways, he has helped the Jewish people, the Jewish land, the Jewish state. And it's not, for me, it's not my place to discuss administration's policies or his policies, whatever. That's not the issue. But the words and the actions of this president that are not taken out of context, they have been repeated and understood in context. There's no spin here. These are his own deeds and comments. They need to be condemned. There needs to be a macha in strong and unequivocal terms. The pasuk says, "Lo saguru mipnei ish." Do not recoil in fear out of any man. And out of Kvod Shemaim, the Rabbeinu Shlomo is looking at us in this context, and we have to stand up and say, without tiptoeing around it, that the leadership and the behavior of this individual is wrong. And it's not acceptable by our standards. By standing by and not protesting or condemning yesterday's violence as it happened, b'shas maisa, by consistently verbally abusing people with whom he disagrees, by discrediting and demeaning the institutions and the instructions of law and order, he should be held accountable. If just to be called out, to understand that we know for each other that this is not okay. There's a story, Chassidus Shemaisa, of a king, and he had a very trusted and beloved servant. And one day the servant comes to the king and he says to the king, Your Highness, Your Honor, we have a problem. All the grain in the land, it's all tainted. And everyone who has eaten from that grain has gone insane. So I don't know what to tell you, but tomorrow morning when we eat breakfast, our cream of wheat with a little bit of brown sugar on the top, it's going to make us insane. So the king said, I have an idea. I want you to put a dot on my forehead, and I'm going to put a dot on your forehead. And this way, when we see each other, we'll at least be reminded that we're both insane. We have to call out and say that this is insanity and that it's wrong. Not just because, as Jews, in today's environment, with the type of anti-Semitism that has been on the rise for the last 4 years, and the breaking of barriers yesterday, Rachmana Litzlan, lo aleinu, nobody should suffer anything anymore, and certainly not us, but not because we're worried from an anti-Semitic standpoint that our lives are in danger, Shem should watch over us, but because we, as Torah Jews, should be a moral compass for humanity. That's our responsibility. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is expecting for us. That's why we're living in this world. We are, on the one hand, apart from it. We are distinct from it. But we are a part of it as well. Ger v'toshav anochi imachem. Everybody in their own life will face their ultimate din v'cheshbon, their ultimate reckoning before the Ribono Shel Olam. And this president will have his own. And obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put him here at this time for a specific reason. Yet we have to upload our responsibility as an Orla Amim, that there is no place for so many of these destructive, offensive, wrong behaviors or the inflammatory rhetoric or demagoguery. The Psukim and Chazal describe and characterize Paro as being self-absorbed, as narcissistic and arrogant. And ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to teach him and the entire Egyptian civilization that there's no place for this in Hashem's world. And even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them the Makos and the Jewish people left, but yet the horses of Egypt, Sus Verochvo, that vehicle of bullying, shaming, manipulating, represented by the Sus, by the arrogance, the bravado, that didn't die in the Yam Suf. Yet it's up to us to follow an alternative narrative. The covenant at Sinai. The bris with HaKadosh Baruch Hu to create a nation that is a model which is wholly and entirely valued and respected, that gives us the opportunity to rise above this Sitra Achra, that's Rodefus. Those horses are calling us, come back. Maybe there is an urge that we have to engage in that, or to clap for it, or even to relish in it. But we don't want to give in to that. At Sinai, everyone stood around. Vayichan Sham Yisrael, all Jews had a place. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even according to the Gemara at the beginning of Avodah Zarah, offered the Torah to all nations. But from a standpoint of looking at other Jews in the context in which we live, and we think about this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the alternative to Egypt to build a Bris Sinai where every person is respected and welcomed and appreciated, not diminished or shamed or put down because they have a different viewpoint. It's up to us, Lamaisa, to dive into the Ribbono Shel Olam, that he should have Rachmanus on us. Please, Ribbono Shel Olam, we desperately need Rachmanus. We need Rachmanus to heal the pandemic, the physical illness, but we need the Rachmanus to heal Shivurei Lev, the broken hearts that are expressing themselves in very damaging and terrible ways. In addition to davening, we can think about these four areas of pursuit in our own lives, of creating civility and connection in our own communities, to try to prevent, to the extent that we can, to make people feel, to prevent people from feeling so disconnected and so far from us that they don't feel valued, they don't feel heard. Number two, to speak truth and reject falsehood from wherever it emanates. Number three, to recognize and utilize the power of words, to understand the destructive nature of negative and shameful and harmful speech, but also to realize the incredible power and constructive koach that the koach HaDibor has to build and create worlds, just like Hashem did for us. And finally, to model good, authentic, decent Torah leadership by us, each one of us, respecting the institutions of government in this land, all the institutions of government, whether we like them or not, agree with them or not, and to appreciate the gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us to live in this time and in this place. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be matzil all of us from this tzar. He should bring us back to Yerushalayim Er HaKodesh. We should have opportunity for harmony, peace, umala de'a es Hashem. The entire world should be filled with the knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with peace and serenity and shalom for all. Best wishes for a good Erev Shabbos, Habalein Letova, and thank you for joining our Kola community of learning. Have a great day.